You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of August 30th, 2017. And don't be scared. Those voices in your head are your old buddies, George and Scott.
What are you doing? Turn back.
You can't do it.
You can't. Yes, you can do it. Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alborn.
My name is Scott Juster.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorous conversation about video games, and the druth is out there, ladies and gentlemen. Today we are talking about a pretty recent title. Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. This is a video game from Ninja Theory.
Yeah.
And I have an embarrassing thing to say. I've never played a Ninja Theory game.
I played a little bit of Heavenly Sword, did not like it.
So when I saw the trailer for Senua's Sacrifice, I thought Hellblade was Heavenly Sword.
Did they just make this game again?
Well, I thought, for some reason, I thought like Hellblade Sword, and then this was just like a weird spinoff. I don't know. I've never played Enslaved Odyssey to the West.
I really wanted to, though.
Yeah. Yeah, that one was really well received whenever that came out. And then they also did DMC Devil May Cry, which looked badass, and I also never played.
Yeah. So we really have a great track record here.
Hey, you know what, though? We're here, all right? It's about when you show up, when it matters the most.
And I mean, I think it matters the most now. I mean, this is going to be a debrief, so we're going to talk about the game in its entirety. It is heavily story based, so we'll do a little bit of non story stuff to begin with. But you know, we'll have to do spoilers pretty soon. And I knew nothing about this game.
God, that's such a good way to go in, right?
Yeah, I mean, I know I had seen some previews of it probably around E3 time or something like that.
Yep.
But never really paid attention to it. I think one reason, aside from the subtitle, the title of it is the most generic thing ever.
Oh God, yeah, Hellblade.
Come Hellblade. On. I mean, and that's like the Simpsons version of a video game.
It's also not even it's not even realized in the game. Like, it's not like Senua looks at her sword and I was like, "Oh, there's my Hellblade." You know?
Yeah, it's weird that that was the title. Whatever, maybe it was a thing that they decided it would catch people's attention, whatever. But it was one of those things that it didn't have an evocative title. I didn't really look at it very carefully. And then people started rumbling about it when it came out. And some people that I, you know, trusted, including yourself, are like, we should probably play this game.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I won't bury the lead. I am incredibly happy that we played this game.
Yeah, totally. I really fell in love very hard with Hellblade. I was in the same place as you. I knew very little about the game, other than I recall seeing a trailer of Senua's face, like, talking at E3. And I remember thinking, like, wow, that looks really gorgeous. But I wrote this off as basically, like, I don't know, like a test for face capture technology or something.
Yeah, this is like the next what's his face? Beyond Two Souls guy. It's a tech demo for him.
Exactly. I thought it was some kind of tech demo. I also thought it was going to be a full $60 game.
Mm-hmm.
So when people started talking about it and I saw it was only $30, I was like, oh yeah, this is really good. This is an awesome thing to try out. Yeah. And they ended up really liking it. I should say, I think the approach that you had, where you go in basically completely blind, is a pretty good approach. And I would probably suggest that anyone listening to this thinking about playing the game or feeling like they're probably want to play it at some point, maybe consider just not listening to this episode.
Listen to it after you play. It's not a long game. You can probably finish it in about 6 hours or so, maybe less. So it's not a huge commitment, but yeah, I didn't even really know the mechanics of the game. Like, I knew Ninja Theory and they generally did character action stuff, but I hadn't seen anything. So I was just like, all right, well, let's fire it up.
Well, let's talk a little bit then, getting into it, about not knowing the mechanics.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that I like about this game so much is how it basically tells you next to nothing about how to interact with the world.
Yep.
I know we're all over it. We're all done hearing it. But the Dark Souls-like... element of it, right? Of going in blind, I thought was a really rewarding experience because there's all of these like button presses that you can instigate early on without really knowing their effect. But then as you go along, they sort of come to you and eventually you sort of naturally flow. And it feels to me like you're familiarizing yourself with someone who's already an expert. Mm-hmm. Right? It doesn't feel like the game is starting you off at, oh, you are playing as Senua and she doesn't have five of her abilities. You need to go unlock them at Shrine A, B, and C. Like, everything that you can do in the beginning of the game is everything that you can do at the end. The one difference is you're just better at it.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think also, again, we'll get to the story elements, but does tie into the story as well in terms of how she's interacting with her world.
Yeah. I mean, and for folks that haven't really seen too much of it, it is a third-person exploration plus action game. I think it's split between two separate modes. You know, one is you're walking around exploring the environment, a third person walking simulator, if you will.
Yep.
And then the other part is that there are certain points where you do melee combat, so sword to sword type of combat.
Yep.
And third person, pretty tight over the shoulder, less Devil May Cry and more almost Gears of War-ish in how you move.
Yeah, definitely. I think largely because they want you to just stare at their fucking gorgeous environment.
God, this fucking game looks amazing.
It's so pretty. It's almost absurd because, again, this is a $30 game.
Yeah.
But it has graphics that rival any AAA game I've played this year by far.
Yeah, totally. It's what they do with the environments and the character models and... So the weird thing is, so she has her dreads, right? And every time they zoomed in on the hair, it was like, man, this is amazing. I can see little split ends and stuff. I mean, the amount of detail is kind of is Naughty Dog-esque.
Yeah, and I've never been into dreads, so it's saying something.
It awoken something in me.
Well, in the very intro of the game, right? Like, it begins where she's on a boat sort of going into this world, and it feels like this really sort of profound environmental trip across the River Styx. You know, it really feels like you're entering a sort of otherworldly area.
Yeah.
And giving you that time to breathe and take in all of the gorgeous surroundings and the water. This is also when you're first hearing the voices in Senua's head that will accompany you throughout the entirety of the game. It's a really just a fantastic intro in terms of getting you acclimated to that and letting it sort of wash over you.
Yeah. I mean, that is the core concept of the game. You're playing as Senua. Well, actually, maybe that's kind of a stretch, actually, based on how they address the player during the game. But so you are controlling Senua as the playable character, and throughout the game, you're solving puzzles, but you also have these other disembodied voices in your head giving you messages, and you're looking to complete a quest, basically. You know, as is the case in the harsh northern lands, some weird shit starts happening.
Yeah. Jon Snow shows up. It's nuts. So in terms of like the environment, right? Like, it is very much set in a Nordic mythology landscape, right? Like, one of the things that you're doing in the environmental segments are like looking at these runic stones, and you have this character, the name of Druth, who is telling you some of the mythology of the Vikings, right? Like, oh, the Northmen believe in this and the Northmen believe in that. And a lot of the things that he talks about, you end up encountering in one way or another. But one of the things I thought was really notable about the way that the world both feels very realistic in terms of how it looks and the realism of the graphics, but then also the way that like that mythology is represented. It kind of reminds me of the way that sort of some historians talk about people in the past and how you sort of have to take their beliefs as reality. Like, it's not just good enough to say, oh, there were Vikings and they believed all this dumb shit about Thor and Loki and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's not really... You're not being a good historian if you're not taking their beliefs as tantamount to reality to some extent.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the way that this game deals with Norse mythology in particular is that concept put to paper.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't God of War. This isn't any number of other like a kind of absurd Viking stories where the gods themselves are both real and outlandish and like dramatic and over the top. Mm-hmm. Like this is a story about Norse mythology, but told from the perspective of someone who is as lowly and in awe at those myths as mm-hmm. basically anybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that's a great way of describing it, because it feels fitting in the world, even though it's fantastical to us, but there's really no difference between science or religion or creativity or fiction. It's just kind of one continuum, because that's just the way that the culture worked. I think, you know, that, and of course, like I think one of the big draws of this game and one of the things that they put out very early, the depiction of basically people's mentality or mental illness, specifically like people who do hear voices or people that see things. They really engage with that stuff.
Oh yeah. The fact that the very first credit in the game is to a mental health advisor.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty telling in terms of how much thought went into how they would depict that particular sort of mental issue.
Yeah. There was some other, there was an organization, a center for people that are going through those issues. And then there was also a list of people that were, I think they called them advisors or something. Mm-hmm. But when you watch the kind of making of short of the game, you realize that those people are participants at that center, people that actually have heard voices or seen hallucinations. Yeah.
Oh, fascinating. Yeah. I haven't watched this bonus thing. It's online, I think, if people want to watch it. Yeah.
It's pretty neat because it shows, and basically they showed them various builds of the game and listened to their experiences around what is it actually like when you're hearing voices, or what is it actually like when you're hallucinating. And I mean, thankfully I haven't really been through that, but I've read a pretty, I don't know, for a while I got interested in just like what it sounds like. And I read a bunch of articles and listened to people that recreated what people who have heard voices say that it sounds like.
That sounds really unsettling.
It was really unsettling. And the thing about this game is it sounded very much like that.
Oh, really?
The recordings I'd listened to were, it was a lot of whispering. It was a lot of, conflicting messages, like voices saying that, you know, you're scared or you're dumb, but also voices saying, oh, you can do it, it's fine. And so there's a lot of kind of like conflicting. And so I was like, I mean, if they actually did their homework, it seems like they did. This seems pretty true to what the experience might be like.
Yeah, that's interesting. The audio in the game is just completely stellar, right? Yeah. And they use what is the word? Biurnal? Is that what?
I think that's what. Yeah.
So basically, it's spatial sound.
Yeah. And did you play it with headphones?
I did play with headphones.
Yeah, same here.
And I could not imagine like playing this on the TV would be. It'd be like covering your screen with like a cloth gauze. Look at the beautiful game, because there's meaning itself in the way that you hear sound in this game, and I'll talk a little bit about it as well in the spoilers section.
Yeah.
But those different voices, like, they come from different places around you, and there are certain moments when Senua is low or when she's close to inspiration where they are more or cacophonous, or they disagree, or they blend together, or they move locations. Certain voices in particular appear at different parts of your head when you're hearing it.
Yep.
And it's just this really unique experience where that idea of like people whispering in you, they feel more real because they're around you in a spatial way, where the idea of someone like her, right? Someone in that time period who doesn't have, you know, the technological or scientific background to understand what a mental health issue is like, or what this particular syndrome is like. Of course you would think that you're haunted. Of course you would think that you're cursed, and that there are voices in your head that are telling you to do things.
Yeah.
And whether or not you want to take the game as reality, or, you know, a story of someone in this time period and everything she's seeing and experiencing is just a symptom of her illness, it's super effective in making it feel real from her perspective.
Yeah. I mean, I think the audio. I also realized that I probably should play more games with headphones, just because you do miss a lot when you don't have the fidelity. But I was glad that I did that too. Yeah, just the production value of, and I think overall the ethos of the studio saying we're gonna make, I forget how they phrased it. It was AAA quality titles that explore interesting themes. And it's cool to see that level of polish that you would find in an Uncharted,
yeah,
applied to something that is 6 hours long and about a single topic.
Yeah.
It's the realization of what a huge amount of technical prowess plus funding can mean for a more independent like title.
Yep. And I would say the same thing for the mechanics. Like, yeah, this is a game that feels pared down to its essential parts.
Yeah.
And the combat, which I really enjoyed, and there are a couple of moments when maybe it gets a little bit tedious in some, yeah, of the longer battles, but for the most part, I was really happy with, and every battle felt like I was accomplishing it according to my own skills.
Mm-hmm.
The game also had this feature, and I don't know if you noticed it, where when you first start the game and you do default difficulty, it actually adjusts according to how well you're doing.
Yeah.
Which I don't know. I never really noticed or felt it. I know some people complained about that particular way of dealing with difficulty. I thought it worked pretty well.
I mean, I don't know how. I mean, you know, not to talk myself up, but I never really died in battle, so I.
Whoa! Look at the big sword on Scott.
I mean, I died in some other parts that we'll talk about, but
like Senna was sacrifice.
But I mean, I imagine because so after I finished the game, I went back and like just saw what would happen if you just kept on going. And I wonder if that just adjusts the difficulty down silently to make sure that you don't have a incongruous experience with, yeah, the story.
Wait, did you not die at all? Ever?
I definitely died in parts of the, there was a specific part where you had to move quickly through a place.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I'm just making sure you saw the whole like black arm
thing. Yeah, I definitely saw that. I just in battle, it never really came up, like it wasn't a problem. Yeah. Which is fine. I think the battle system is a pretty straightforward rock, paper, scissors style thing where if an enemy's blocking, you do a punch and then you open them up for an attack, or you parry if you block at the right second. Pretty standard, you know, weak, weak, strong type of combo. Yeah. But
Dark Souls.
But I mean, the style by which it's done and the level of impact that the sound has, and even how the camera pans when you're fighting, thematically it fits really well in the game.
Yeah.
Every fight that you have, and you know, there's not a huge amount of fights in the game, so every fight that you have feels really grounded and tied into what's happening at that point in the story. And it's very thematically resonant.
Yeah. There's also a series of boss fights, which we'll talk about later as well, but I thought, mm-hmm, all of those worked pretty well. They, yeah, each felt really different, and yeah.
They do a lot with the handful of action types that they give you. You know, it's not a platinum-esque brawler. You know, there's a limited number of mechanics, but they're used very well.
Totally, yeah. So would you call this a double-A game?
I mean, I don't know. It just gives me hope that there's... I mean, this is kind of what I always wanted Uncharted to be.
Yeah.
You know, a huge, amazing story and a gorgeous, you know, visual masterpiece, but one that you don't have to play for 15 hours straight.
Yeah, totally. I think as a middle-priced game as well, like $30 is, I think, totally justifiable for a game like this.
Yep.
I cannot think of a single $30 single-player game. Probably. I mean, yeah. I know like what The Witness was 20.
Yep.
I know PUBG was 30, but that's multiplayer. There's just not a whole lot of games that fit within this price range.
Yeah.
In terms of what it is. And I really hope that this is a successful game. And I think everything that I've seen so far has said that Hellblade did very well for itself. And I'm sure come Steam sale season this winter, when there are sales on the game, people will be picking this up for a significant price cut.
Yeah.
But but it's definitely the type of game that I would love to see some of those middle tier developers sort of start producing and considering as like a potential avenue, instead of saying, let's dump an insane amount of money on a game that no one will play, that's a $60 title, or conversely saying, let's come out with a small like indie game or little mobile game and not really use our technology and our staff and team to its fullest potential.
Or just, we have to make an eSport.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's, well, something where it's...
that's what's next for the Hellblade DLC.
What's the... Senua's was soccer. Before we get into spoilers, we should talk about another visual quirk of the game. There's a lot of full motion video in this game.
Yes. Oh, man. I did not see that coming.
Nope.
I was so happy about that.
Yeah.
I mean, so... even though there's full motion video, all of the FMV has a sort of, I don't know what you would call it, like it's through a filter.
Yeah.
But it's not like a Instagram filter, you know, this isn't just, this isn't like, you know, it's not like giving it a like a retro tone. Mm. It's almost like she's seeing it almost like a hologram, I would say.
Yeah.
Because it all of the characters are translucent. Mm. And at first I was like, what the fuck am I seeing right now? This is super weird. But as the game went along and I saw the divide, especially when they would show scenes with Dillian, her lover, that to me was super effective because he was a real person and I felt like I was seeing him as a real person in her eyes.
Yep.
And that there was a slight fiction to the world. It was a real world and feels real, but there's a slight fiction to it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that is totally works in this particular story. I don't know if I would want that FMV in, like, Uncharted, but I think it works for the most part.
I mean, the fact that they... I mean, there is a scene in the game where the polygonal character model of Senua is face-to-face and hand-to-hand with an FMV character.
Oh, I love that scene.
Like, the bravery of that, where even the greatest looking polygonal character is going to look like a video game character versus actual video footage.
Yeah.
And they're willing to put that face to face with each other for, as you point out, the thematic reason of differentiating between what is a memory, what is a hallucination, and what is reality.
Yeah.
And you get to pick which is which, like maybe the FMV is the hallucination, maybe Senua herself is the hallucination, but it's just a great, it's such an inspired choice of how do you make a distinction between two different worlds. And it's just a fucking great, it's one of the best uses of FMV I've ever seen in a game.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, there's an elegance to so many aspects of this game, and it's pretty remarkable that they took what was essentially a piece of technology we thought was dead in the 80s and still managed to weave that in just as elegantly as they do any other system in the game.
Yeah. It's pretty special. So I guess before we get into spoilers, like, definitely highly recommend people play it.
It's definitely on my list, my short list of best games I've played this year.
Yeah. Okay. Talk briefly about the story itself.
Yes. So spoiler warning for Hellblade: Senua's Sacrifice. Listener beware.
Yeah. All right. Where do we start?
So,
you're on a
boat. You're on a boat, and all the voices are in your head.
Yeah.
And you're like, I don't know what's going on. One of the first characters that you meet is Druth, right? Who's this character that I guess Senua met at some point on, like, a crazy bender through the woods, I think, is basically the story, right? Like, as the game progresses, you learn that she essentially enters and has psychotic episodes where fiction becomes even more tenuous and even compares it a little bit to, like, depression, right? So she meets this Druth character out in the woods, and he's the one that ends up telling you more about the Vikings. He was a member of your tribe or whatever, got kidnapped and tortured by the Northmen, and he's the one that's essentially your spiritual guide towards reuniting with Dillian, who's now dead, but ideally you're venturing to go reclaim his soul.
After the after just going through the game and going through the making of featurette, I just did a little Googling and Google mapping. So apparently this takes place on the very northern part of Scotland, like,
oh, really?
the Orkney area.
Oh,
where
yeah.
the Vikings would go and raid, basically.
Real quick, can you imagine how fucking terrifying the Vikings must have been?
Oh, Jesus. I mean, fuck. Like, just a bunch of crazy bearded wild men get off a boat and start flaying yeah. you.
Well, and not just that, like, and then they leave.
Yeah.
And they take people with them, and you don't yeah. know if they're going to come back, when they're going to come back. Like,
yeah.
of course, stories about them start to spread. They become mythologies in and of themselves.
Yeah.
Right?
So anyway, apparently this thing actually happened, which is terrifying. Also, yeah. what they did to Dillion is called the Bloody Eagle, and apparently that's a real thing, too. So
crazy. What did they do? Remind me. Did they flayed him alive?
Yeah, and kind of just cut him up, and he was kind of crucified on that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the thing. Apparently that was a real thing, too. So that's crazy.
I absolutely love that Senua is carrying the skull with her throughout the entire yes. game. It's so fucking good.
And they introduced that just by offhandedly talking about, okay, well, you know, the soul is kept in the head, so you need to keep the head with you if you're going to, you know, have yeah. a vessel to basically return it to.
I mean, it makes for one of the most impactful moments in the game to me, right? Like,
yeah.
the scene when she's underground
yep.
and she drops Dillion's skull, I was like, agape. I could not believe that had happened.
Yeah. Right?
And of course I knew, it was like, okay, this is where we're going to fight the boss. But that whole scene,
yeah.
when you're underground and you're trying to solve some of these puzzles and getting in fights, and she is in a far more like dangerous and precarious position.
Yep.
Especially when you start seeing the monster who like chases you and you can't actually see them and you hear them in the background and
yep.
you have to like run towards the light to protect yourself. It felt like a mix of like a horror video game and Eco almost
yeah.
or The Last Guardian, you know, mm-hmm. like it had a sense of being in this sort of honorific temple almost, but then also being chased and terrified by xenomorphs.
Yeah. And all the while that is represented by these weird hallucinations, also full motion video of,
yep.
you know, showing a beast kind of chasing yeah. you. Yeah. And the sinking feeling when you see the skull fall all the way down
oh,
that
yeah.
pit is like, oh no.
And the great thing too, right, is during this whole moment, right, Senua is, because basically each section of the game, you're fighting a boss or whatever, you're on your way towards a boss, but it's about some particular aspect of her life,
mm-hmm.
right? And this is the moment where I think you start to understand who she is the most, because her
yeah.
father starts to speak in your mind
yep.
a bit more, and you learn that he basically tried to exorcise her demons by throwing her in a hole for days
yeah.
in like utter darkness, right?
Yeah.
And that sense of empowerment you get when you finally work your way out is just super rewarding, because you know it's in this context of her overcoming basically that trauma that she was inflicted upon. And the boss fight in particular has this really cool moment where the beast will go into the darkness
mm-hmm.
and you can't see anything, but you can hear what
yeah.
direction they're coming from.
Yep.
So you can point yourself in the right direction.
Yep.
That was so cool from an audio perspective that I was kind of surprised that it was something that I can't think I've ever experienced before.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that all of the bosses really are, they do a good job at basically using one gimmick and then not really reusing it that much.
Yep.
You know, they have the normal grunts who you're just fighting hand to hand, but then each boss, whether it's the, what's his name, Valravn or Surt, or
yep.
They each have a different way of fighting, and they don't really repeat. So it doesn't overstay its welcome, basically.
Yeah, totally.
At the very beginning, you have to open up the gate to Hela to try to, you know, get Dillion's soul back, her husband. And you have to go through those two bosses, Valravn or Surt. Which one did you do first?
I did Surt first.
Okay.
The fire one. Yeah.
Yeah. And I did Valravn first, so I'd be interested to hear what you...
Oh, interesting, yeah.
You know, how that went.
I really enjoyed Valravn, but I'm glad I did it the other way around.
Yeah.
Because Valravn upsets the way that you see the world, because there's all these optical illusions, right? Like, all of the puzzles were built around optical illusions. Like, the act of going through a door to change something and then having to go back through the door to change it back to then progress felt to me like navigating a dreamscape.
Mm-hmm.
Much in the same way that some other games have done in the past, like Max Payne and, mm-hmm. you know, a few others that do, like, these bizarre bending, Batman, right? Like, mm-hmm. the Arkham series do those cool scarecrow moments where it really feels like you're using the unreality of gaming to create an only-in-games experience.
Yeah.
Which I really, really appreciated. But why I'm glad I did it after Cert was that I was less inclined to see that coming because I've mm-hmm. already been through this boss scene. The optical illusion thing wasn't really in there other than like setting up the lines to open doors and stuff, right? But
yeah.
for the most part, it was just the sort of normal experience. But then really encountering this like illusion landscape was just that much more surprising.
Yeah. I also found Valravn, the battle itself, to be more difficult.
The boss fight?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just the what you had to do to get there and the enemies you had to fight. But I mean, it might just be like, it might just be a stylistic thing. Yeah. But both were very cool. It was it reminded me a lot of what Titanfall 2 and Dishonored 2 did last year, where you could basically warp into different realities where, oh, you walked through this thing that looked like a doorway and all of a sudden this crumbled staircase is now rebuilt.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say one reason why I'm really thankful I did Cert first was I didn't realize you could run when exploring the world until the Cert level, because I kept dying from the flashbacks to the burning city.
Yeah.
If I had gone through all of the Valravn level walking, it would have taken me forever. Mm.
I found out that you could run during that level. I would just started during pressing the Valravn level? Buttons to see what they did, because I never bothered to look up the controls in the options menu when they clearly tell you what it is. And so I just started pressing every button to see what would happen. I was like, oh, this game will go a lot faster now.
Yeah. I love that, though. Like, I wasn't even complaining until that fire sequence, because at first I thought, oh, they're forcing me to walk and really take this in. This is great. This is awesome.
Yeah. Like, and they're like,
exactly. And then I was burning alive. Yeah. One thing I want to say real quick about the Druth section in particular, because while he's with you the entirety of the game, this is where you're like first really meeting him.
Yeah.
You get a good sense that he's really important to Senua, like her own well-being, her sense of identity. Like, she is the replacement father figure that you learned sort of tortured her as a kid. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that really was effective for me was the way that the voices in your head, right, and this happens pretty early on, will disagree with each other. And sometimes they'll help you and sometimes they won't help you.
Yep.
And sometimes they'll be talking over each other and it will be so cacophonous that it's difficult to concentrate, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's bothersome. It's almost annoying, right?
Yeah.
Or at the very least, it's, like, upsetting. Like, when you're in the dark area and you're sort of navigating around and they're chattering about the monster coming to get you, like, it's already stressful enough. Mm-hmm. I don't need fucking those two dudes from Sesame Street. What are those guys, like?
Bert and Ernie?
Yeah, no. The guys in the theater.
Oh, yeah, from the Muppet Show. They're
from,
like,
the Muppets, yeah. Right. I don't need them, like, in my head being like, hey, get off the stage, Senua, you know? But what's so great is throughout all of these areas, you can zoom in and listen to Druth talk about whatever, some Viking mythology, right?
Uh-huh.
Which arms you with context of the world. But whenever he's speaking, he also quiets the voices in your head, quite literally, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that act of being like, oh, I see a Druth moment. I can quiet the voices in my head for a second and hear someone give me something that is interesting and helpful, I thought was so effective in showing how important Druth really was to her. Because he's, other than the voices in your head, he's the one that's with you for the entire game, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part is always a sort of comforting voice within the chaos that is this sort of Northmen landscape.
Yeah. I mean, it's just another example of linking the mechanics up to the story, where it does give you, it gives you the player a break from this, just as it gives her something else to focus on. And it also gives her some help, you know, through the wild, just like she got from him when she first met him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I thought both of those were very good. You go through the Hela gate after that.
Hela. By the way, I just love that they say Hela all the time. Because I say Hela all the time, so it was perfect.
Who knew that Senua was from Northern California? The Northmen came and took her.
Yeah, the Northmen are just Bohemians from Guerneville.
I thought it was... I always like when when somebody makes a pass at making a supernatural being and just letting you stare at the maw.
Yeah.
And Hela is a grotesque character.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just seeing that huge, you know, enormous god come at you was...
Oh, yeah, on the bridge.
I thought that was going to be the end of the game right there.
Oh, yeah, same here. Like, that was so... Especially because it's like, oh, yeah, Senua, you got this. Like, time to go get your man and stuff. And then you see this thing and you go, wow, I'm wholly unequipped to fight this.
Yeah. I think that was the point, too, where it was one of the... It was one of the moments where the music and the theme of being on the bridge and just going forward just fit together so well, where it's not an arena combat situation. There's a straight line, and there's Senua, and there's her destination, and there's this crazy pounding Viking music, and your job is to just chop through everything in your path.
Yep, yeah. And it feels good. Like, I felt strong and powerful.
Yeah. Very cool. Of course, Hela then just, you know, wrecks you at right
after. She fucks you up.
Yeah.
She basically throws you into the sea at that point.
Yeah. But then that's where the most of the Dillion stuff happens, right?
Yes. Yeah. So this sequence was one of my favorite sequences because you find some like magical sword or whatever, and it's like, oh, you can't. The Lady of the Lake says you can't have the sword unless you go and like relive moments from your past, like flashbacks and stuff.
The dwarven sword.
Yeah, so you basically have to reforge the sword by going and experiencing certain shards that are all moments of Senua's past. Mm. And each of them felt like this could be a little mini game. Like they could have just released the Dillion chapters.
Yeah.
And been done. Be like, here, $15 please, and I think I probably would have been happy, to be honest. Like, I think the story that love story, like, this is where it really becomes a love story, and I really realized why she was doing what she was doing. Mm-hmm. In particular, there's a level where you navigate the entire space without sight. Mm-hmm. Like, she's blind and it's totally dark, and it does a sort of thing like her movement echoes across the building, so you actually can see.
Yeah.
But for a while, I closed my eyes and tried to navigate the space just with the audio, because Dillion will tell you, like, oh, you hear water, go over, you know, towards the water and follow the river. And you can totally do that. I stopped the moment freaky fucking monster showed up, because that's just too much for me. But you really can just move through the space using the sound, which I thought was really, really cool. And again, like, that entire moment of her going through that darkness quite literally, and you going with her, and then sort of seeing how healing having that other person in your life could be just really resonated after what was one of the most unsettling sequences in the game.
I mean, the game starts to justify why she wants to bring him back, and in a way that's not that patronizing. It's you know, they found each other. He didn't cure her, you know, he didn't fix her.
Yep.
He just recognized her for what was happening and lived alongside with it.
Yep.
And that was enough to give her some stability and to give her hope that she could live a life that wasn't like anyone else's life, but was still a fine life to live.
Absolutely,
And you just understand why she cares so much about piecing that back together after it's broken.
And was there for her right when essentially nobody was.
Yeah.
Like, her mother dies really young, her father's super abusive. Yeah. She's always finding villagers who are like, you're the one, why can't my potatoes die?
Yeah, stuff, exactly. Right?
Fucking,
people
man,
are trying to
way,
burn her on every side.
Like, yokels ruining shit since fucking pre-2000, whatever, you know? Yeah, so it's really, I think, really super effective for that. And then even some of the sequences where you're experiencing, like, the mother story, I thought was pretty cool as well, because you also get a sense of, like, oh, okay, these are the moments that essentially built who Senua is, who she was when she found Dillion, why she's here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I really liked Senua as a character even before this, but it was these sequences in particular where I felt like, oh, I'm really getting a good sense of who she is and why she's here.
Yeah.
And that was pretty deep into the game. And I think normally I might criticize that by saying, oh, well, why should we bother? You know, why do we... The story of someone going into hell to find a loved one, right? Like, that is a very old story. We've heard this story before, right? Like, Senua was not supposed to turn around. Otherwise, whatever, she's stuck in hell.
Yeah.
But the way that the game makes everything seem real gives you, I think, enough time to take what she's saying for granted, so that when you get to the moment where you're really sort of learning who she is, it feels like she's relearning it, right? It's not like, oh, I'm being told these things didactically. I'm more so remembering why this is so important to the character that I'm ostensibly playing as.
Yeah, definitely. We talked a little bit about the lair of the beast.
Yep.
That was pretty neat. And also, again, as you go further into the game, you get more and more into Senua's backstory, and that's where you learn a lot more about the dad. And God, that moment where, you know, you're speaking, Senua is speaking, and the dad's voice is coming out of her reflection in the mirror. So it's like, oh, yeah, he has become an internalized voice for her, as is all the other voices.
Side note, this guy has the fucking creepiest voice.
He really does.
I don't know if I don't think you ever saw the movie The Witch. But there's a father in The Witch that is basically this guy. Like, he is super Christian and, like, really scared of the devil. And he has this low, grumbly, gravelly voice that is just, like, I have a hard time believing a human being could make such a voice. And I don't want it in my head. I don't want it in the fucking room. I don't even want to watch it on screen.
In the short, the featurette short, they show him recording some of the lines.
Oh, no way. What does he sound like normally?
He sounds pretty similar. It's before all of the post-processing that they did on the voice, but he does sound like that. He just has this really dark, booming voice. And it's like, whoa, jeez, yeah, this guy's creepy.
Yeah, this is like, man, how do you find anyone in your life to love you? You're a monster.
Especially when you keep locking them in holes for years at a time.
It really doesn't help.
Anything else to say about the shadow, the boss fight, any of that? That's where you learn a lot more about Ragnarok and all of the crazy Norse mythology.
All the Viking stuff. Yeah. No, I mean, that was one of my favorite sequences. It's probably my favorite boss, I would say.
That's also when you start really using because your sword is now imbued with some sort of magic, so you can build up that magic through a combo and then use it to either see invisible enemies or to slow down time, basically.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. I liked all of the combat sequences. They didn't feel too long as well, and the having to run from light source to light source, while I know it's been done in games before, still felt like it really worked.
So you gather runes, you slice up beasts, and then finally get back to Hela's domicile.
Yep.
And this is, again, it's one of those straight line where you see Hela far away and you're just marching towards her, which I thought was a pretty powerful segment of the game.
Yeah. You're talking about the one on all of the platforms and the different enemies on each segment.
Exactly. Yeah. And the bridge kind of makes itself as you run towards Hela.
Yeah. There's this amazing anger that the actress who voices Senua performs in this section that I just thought was awesome. Like, it's up there with the coolest sequences in, like, any Uncharted game for sure, but countless other games, right? Where if someone is in, like, a bestial rage and they're justifiably angry and they're fucking pissed and they should be pissed and they're taking out their vengeance. Like, even the moments when I'm, like, almost dead, right? So they'll often pause when you're dying on the ground as an enemy is about to kill you, and if you don't roll out of the way at the right time, you'll die. But if you do roll out of the way, it's this really epic moment where Senua sort of regains her composure and strikes back at the enemy that just fought her. And you're at this moment where the voices in your head are telling you can't do it, your father's voice is telling you can't do it, there's this like Hela minion goddess right that is like massive. And going through each of these segments and going through these fight sequences and refighting some of those bosses again, too, in sort of weird shadowy forms, feels, even if the victory isn't fully earned, right, because you don't ultimately get there, it feels triumphant.
Yeah. Yeah. You're putting to use the stuff that you went through to get here.
Right.
I mean, I think overall on that note, the game is utterly humorless. There's not a shred of levity or self-awareness or winking at the camera.
Yeah, Druth is never like, oh, let me tell you about those other Viking gods.
Yeah, yeah. Let me tell you about the lost Vikings. But, I mean, it's, you don't, there are plenty of games that are utterly humorless, but come off as cheesy or cloying or overly insincere. Self-serious. Yeah. And yeah, that's a great way of putting it. The sincerity of not only the world, but the performances, and people just, you can tell everyone committed 100%.
Yep.
And especially like Druth, where, I mean, that guy is wearing a fucking bird skull on his forehead and he's acting his ass off.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. And like super thick eyeliner and a lot of dirt.
Yeah. It's like, it's the version of the, you know, the Sega CD of Night Trap that actually went serious rather than cheesy.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah. And so you finally get to, you finally get to Hela. I also like how she gets smaller the closer you are to her.
Yes, totally.
Just such a great touch where the closer you get to the thing that seems so fearsome, the more you realize that it's this other smaller, frail thing.
Yeah. You know, approaching this ending, right? And ultimately the ending is a sort of potentially confusing run, right? Mm-hmm. Like Senua confronts Hela and does or does not die and does or does not realize that all of this isn't real and that she's really battling an inner demons, or maybe not. Maybe you want to see it as this is all real, whatever, right?
Yeah.
But the idea that they're seeding the concept of the story actually being about how Senua confronts the parts of herself that make her so insecure and scared and incapable of dealing with the world one by one as you're going through this game.
Yeah.
Is really, really interesting. So that by the time you get to this moment, this could have felt, again, this could have felt cheesy, like a potentially obscure or incomprehensible ending like this. They often get criticism in video games, in television shows, in movies, and rightly so, because I think a lot of people don't execute this type of story very well, where ambiguous endings come off as cheesy, as you said, or potentially just maddening and incoherent. And I think they earned an ambiguous ending here, because even something as seeing Hela shrink in size as you approach resonates with either interpretation of how you want to see Senua's journey.
Yeah. Yeah. So what did you think in the end? I was thinking to myself, well, maybe she became Hela. I mean, Hela looks like she's dead and collapsed at the end after she releases Dillion.
Yeah. You know, the way that I sort of interpreted it was that it wasn't real, right? And that she was essentially confronting the madness inside of herself. And she took on this role, right? Like she does this with the voices as well, right? Like at certain points in the game, the voices go away and then they come back again. And the voices, sometimes they're scared, like, oh, we're back. We're still here. It's okay. We're still here. We're with you, right? And sometimes they're encouraging. And I think there's a really powerful message here if you interpret this as Senua owning the voices in her head in a way, right? And saying like, I'm going to listen to the ones that give me power, and I'm going to listen to the ones that criticize me, but only because they're allowing me to be cautious and smart, right? And taking ownership of that, and her becoming Hela, I think does a really good reflection of that. But then on top of it, right, even that aside, I still think it would be unfair to approach the ending of this game as just, oh, this is just a poor woman who didn't actually like live through any of this stuff, and she's just crazy. Because I think that disrespects the idea of her life and her moment and this particular time and context, right, in history. This, there is no difference between that being real and that being fake.
Yeah.
So it's disrespectful of me to read it in a way that undermines how real it actually was, if that makes sense.
I mean, the again, something that you mentioned at the very top of the show, without the dichotomy between kind of rational post-enlightenment thought and superstition, there's just a spectrum. And so they're not in opposition of each other.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so whatever happens, I mean, it's basically the whole thing is a metaphor. And it may be real or maybe not. It may not be real, but the message itself is the point rather than the facts of it.
I mean, the one thing I will say, though, that really bummed me out is that she didn't end up bringing Dillion back to life.
Yeah.
Like, I was really bummed out. I was like, man, you fought so fucking hard. Yeah. You've had a shitty life. You're going to keep having a shitty life.
Yeah.
You deserve this one thing, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, the best that we or she could hope for was, I mean, she physically and metaphorically kind of lets him go and stops carrying the skull, and maybe in that metaphorical way releases him from his capture from Hela.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty good.
It's interesting because it still doesn't have that moment though. It, like, I think they could have had a scene where the spirit of Dillian shows up and she's like, "Oh, Dillian, I have to let you go." And he's like, "Oh, that's okay."
A force ghost.
You know what I mean? Like, you could have a scene where she confronts that Dillian's death in a way that actually shows him being there.
Yeah.
But you really don't get that. Like, she really has to confront his death in a way that to me seemed very real to personal loss. Yeah. You know, like, you don't get the benefit of closure by your loved one who's passed showing up and saying, "Hey, I passed. It's okay. You can let me go and move on." That doesn't happen, no matter how much people want it to, you know?
Yeah.
So it was a bummer, but I also really like that aspect of it, right? Like, she has to be the one to take action in reclaiming her life, either from her mental illness, from the trauma that her parents inflicted on her, or for the trauma of her personal loss. And no matter which aspect of Senua you're looking at, she's the one with the agency at the end to really make that call.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very, very well executed on very slippery grounds.
Yes, absolutely.
Cool. Well, I mean, I think we've digested most of this. I mean, I think, again, the end result is definitely play this game. It was kind of came out of nowhere. Yeah.
This feels like this year's Brother, A Tale of Two Sons to me.
Emotionally
resonant, fucking ludonarrative resonance. Yeah. I know, whatever that term, but like totally works. Everything's in conjunction to each other. Looks gorgeous. Plays great. Can't recommend it enough.
And there's nothing more metal than Viking lore.
I mean, real talk though, I love Viking mythology. Like, as a kid, it was awesome. I really, really enjoyed a game that took that world and made it real in a way that wasn't like the Thor movies, you know? Yeah. Like, Vikings so often are basically like dwarves with beards and all they do is like bloodlust after each other. Like, the mythology that Druth tells you is real in the context of this game, even if it's not one where it's where you're navigating it. And that just was badass. Like, if you are into Norse mythology, this game alone is a treat.
Yeah, for sure. All right. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. You can't be sure that Scott or I aren't voices in your head. So one of the ways to be sure is come and listen to our past episodes and see if we say anything that you wouldn't already know.
You can catch us in a lie.
Yeah, catch us in a lie. And we will prove that you're not downloading a podcast that isn't real.
Yeah.
We are real, though. And if you want to download us, you can download us and listen to us anywhere. We're on Alexa, I guess, now, and all kinds of stuff. Give us reviews.
Cool. All right, everyone. Until next time, thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week.
So long. Every time.